Because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the King of Education, because it is the essence of all doctrines and philosophies explained before. Among the principal philosophers in India are Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Yogivalkya, Shandilya, and Vaishvanara. And finally, there is Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Sutra. So there is no dearth of knowledge in the field of philosophy or transcendental knowledge. Now the Lord says that this ninth chapter is the king of all such knowledge, the essence of all knowledge that can be derived from the study of the Vedas and different kinds of philosophy. It is the most confidential, because confidential or transcendental knowledge involves understanding the difference between the soul and the body. And the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in devotional service. Om Ganita Damandasya Ganajama Shalaka Chakshuran Malitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Devotional service is a very confidential topic, because Krishna is controlled and conquered by love. In this world, there are two rasas, Shanta and Dasya. Shanta ras being passive adoration, meditation on the Supreme, and it becomes active when a relationship between master and servant awakens. But in this world, you cannot have a relationship of sakyaras, friendship with the Lord, because friendship requires equality. You have to be on the same level, which means either you have to rise to the level of Krishna, or he has to cast a spell of illusion called Yoga Maya that he is on our level. What to speak of the higher mellows, Vatsalya, Madhurya, Swakya, Parakya, which Mahaprabhu came to broadcast. These are very confidential. In Sakya Ras, Krishna takes an equal position with his friends. But what does Krishna do with his friends? They play games, they wrestle. And in that wrestling, sometimes Krishna loses. Sometimes he won't admit that he lost. And his friend tells him, "I won, you lost." And he said, "No." He said, "What do you mean?" "Because there was a banana peel on the ground and I slipped, and that breaks the rules." "No, Krishna, I won." And the devotee insists that he won and just forcibly climbs on the Lord's back. Now, if he went on the altar and tried to climb on the Lord's back, you might experience some resistance. That's Sakya Ras. But Salya Ras, Krishna becomes totally dependent on the love and care and protection of Mother Yashoda. Now, in Sakya Ras, if you have a close, intimate friendship with someone and it's developing sweetly, and then you find out that he's the son of the president, or the son of a very extravagantly rich man, what does that do for your intimacy? It cripples it. It weakens it. So Krishna when he experiences that his devotees are sensing, which they periodically do, that he's God, and their love becomes weakened, and his pleasure is diminished, and he calls upon his yoga maya to cover them over. What to speak of Madhurya, when Krishna just becomes completely enamored and obsessed with the love of his servitors. This is very confidential. Krishna makes himself vulnerable by submitting to the love of his servants. And this knowledge cannot be indiscriminately distributed, as we discussed the other day, in demonology, beginning with Putana, pseudo-guru. It means either the cheating guru who has no qualification to give instruction in the science of devotion, or more subtly, the guru who actually is qualified but does not consider the aptitude of the disciple and gives premature knowledge of intimate topics and thus diminishes the spiritual life of the disciple. So this week, in anticipation of the event 1 week from today, which, in commemoration of which, devotees are making preparations worldwide, and avatars and devotees since time immemorial have been preparing for this event, we should take advantage, because whenever there's an upcoming event of great significance, a marriage, a festival, or in Bharat Bhumi, it might be a cricket match. And there's a great rising tide of emotion and feeling and appreciation. We want to ride that wave as far as our capacity allows. Lately we've been discussing a context to give us a frame of reference to give proper appreciation to the appearance of Lord Gauranga, who is most confidential of all avatars, Chana Avatar, very confidential. We want to understand properly and develop some qualification. Our current trend of discussion has been Ganga Devi, who is inseparable with Navadvipa Dham, where the Lord appears. And the Lord's Dham is a creation of his internal potency. So, in a discussion between Parvati and Lord Shiva on the creation of Navadvipa Dham, Mahadev explained that Srimati Radharani manifests Navadvipa Dham as her masterpiece of creative artwork to lure Krishna back from a competitor. Of course, transcendental competition is different than anything in this world. It's all for the pleasure of Krishna. There's no rivalry. There's no jealousy. There's no loser. Everyone wins. And it's done with intimate understanding of the Lord's pleasure. But as the pastime unfolded, Mahadev explained to Parvati, who was listening very attentively, Srimati heard that Krishna was enjoying with Viraja in Braj, just as a bee becomes lost in the nectar of a lotus, Krishna in the lotus of Braj was wandering with Viraja Gopi, and Srimati went straight to the site, and Krishna, seeing her coming, disappeared, and Viraja transformed herself into a river. And Srimati looked around, and there was no sign. When she again heard that they were together again, and she came to the spot, the same thing transpired. And to lure Krishna out of his hiding place, she summoned the Jamuna and Ganga to form a moat around the region. And if you read the 64 arts, which Krishna and Balaram and the gopis, and they all study and master, one of the arts is creating kunds and waterways. So Srimati, from the moat formed by the Ganga and Jamuna to protect this private garden meant for Krishna's confidential pastimes, with those rivers, carved a formation of waterways which made a beautiful lotus of 9 islands, 8 petals and 1 stamen. Navadvipdham. And she assembled her sakis and fashioned the rivers into beautiful patterns of that ornate lotus and adorned it with the most exquisite groves and gardens and invited springtime and Cupid to make their permanent residence there. And she filled it with beautiful beautiful birds who were eternally singing the holy names of Krishna. And then she dressed most gorgeously in a colorful sari and began playing on her flute such an enchanting raga, expressing her own heart's love, which was so irresistible to Krishna that it drew him out of hiding, and he came to her side and took her hand. And in a voice choked with love, he expressed to her that you are my very life, and no one is more dear to me, and I promise to never leave you. And since you have created this fabulous paradise for my pleasure, I will stay with you here forever. And we will fill this place with new sakis. And since everything will be new, it will be glorified and known hereafter as New Vrindavan, Nava Vrindavan. And it will be the shelter not only of those living entities who want to return home to enter our intimate pastimes, but it will be the shelter of all the tirthas, all the holy places, all the avatars will take up residence here eternally. And those who come to worship us here will develop the eternal service mood of the manjaris who assist the sakis. And this land will be blessed with the ability to confer the merit to pilgrims who come here, with the benefits of visiting all the holy places, and they will easily attain prema. which most fully and deeply satisfies us. So, the various kuns and rivers which enhance and enrich and facilitate the Lord's pastimes are the emblems of rasa, because rasa is fluid, it's flowing, it's love, it's the different flavors of love, which are never static or stagnant, but flowing, like rivers. And sometimes there are kuns, which are impounding areas, which hold those waters, which have different flavors and characteristics and benefits. When Mahaprabhu came to Braj and he heard the name Aristogram, he was saying, "Where is Radhakund?" Which has the unique ability to confer upon those who bathe in her holy waters a flavor of love similar to that which Srimati Radharani feels for Krishna. And the pilgrims next bathe in Shyamakund, which bestows a flavor of love similar to of that which Krishna feels for Radha. And then again, the pilgrims complete their bath in Radhakund. And in the region of Nandagram, the kuns reflect the luster of Krishna, their sapphire hue. And around Varshana, the kuns are basically of a golden hue, especially Pilipakur, which is distinctly golden in color to this day, immortalizing the appearance of Lord Gauranga in Braj 5,000 years ago. This is one of his many first appearances. Because tricked by maternal affection, Mother Yashoda, concerned only with her son's welfare and quite unaware of the course of the gopi's love, when Krishna was just a young child, and because of the blessing of Durvasa Muni, that whoever tasted her cooking would be very strong and free from disease. So even though there was so much suspicion and controversy, Mother Yashoda made sure that Srimati was able to come cook for Krishna every day. And even though they were just little children, as Mother Yashoda watched the very graceful, demure, gentle nature of Kirtita's daughter, she thought, "There is no match in all creation for my Kalachandra like that of Kalavati's child." So she called her and said, "I think you should become an ornament on my family's tree. We must propose this to Kalavati." So she took Srimati and drew her to her side. And Mother Yashoda felt as if that soft golden body of Srimati Radhika was just melting and merging into hers. Not like the monists like to merge in identity, but merging in love and intent for Krishna's pleasure. And as Mother Yashoda stroked her soft hair and looked into her bluish eyes, she felt they were just an endless wellspring of grace, mercy, and compassion. And she was contemplating, what kind of goddess is this child? So she took Srimati's tiny hand and looked at her palm and saw all the auspicious signs adorning it. And as tears were flowing from her eyes, she took haldi and wiped that on Srimati's palms. And she said, child, do you know what this means? She said, no. This means you are engaged to be married. What will my mata say? And I don't know if I'm ready to be married. You know, they're children. I'm accustomed to wander at will throughout the groves of Braj and play in the sand. I don't know about this marriage. And Mother Jashoda said, Srimati, you are blossoming in the sunlight of youth, and you must accept the responsibilities that come with it. So little Srimati looked up into Mother Jashoda's eyes and said, your every word is my order. She said, well, anyway, discuss it with your mata. So Srimati touched Mother Jashoda's feet and started on her way home. And as Mother Jashoda watched her just seemed to float down the winding steps coming up to the palace and heard her ankle bracelets jingling, she was thinking that as this girl matures, the devas will be falling from the sky like rain. So she met with her friends, and like an assembly of very beautiful colored clouds, they headed on the path to Nandagram. And when they got part way there and into a secluded place, the little girl stopped, and Srimati showed her palms. And Lalita said, the love of Mother Jashoda is extremely binding. How will you free yourself? Tungavidya said, this is a very delicate situation. But it's easily remedied. Vishaka said, we are way too young to be married. Our freedom will be curtailed. Lalita said, but it's there's an easy remedy to this situation. Your hands have not been painted with some indelible dye. Just wash them off in a kund. Look, right there is a beautiful lake. And they turned, and there was a most charming lake with stairways going down into the water from all sides and trees bowing down, overladen with fruit, dropping their pollen into the crystalline waters. And deer wandered around peacefully and birds sang, just wash your hands in the water. So Srimati lifted up her skirt and stepped into the water and looked down to wash her hands. And then when she saw her reflection in the water and was overcome by its beauty, she was seized by this feeling, maybe I should be Gopal's constant companion and never ever have to leave his side. And then she began to wash her hands, and as the waters turned golden, and the waves spread out in all directions and hitting the banks and rippling back, forming a beautiful pattern of evolving ras. And the waters turn from her hands, that golden luster began expanding toward the far shores of the Kund. And her friends were just watching with intent at the different levels of love that appeared to be rising like ocean tide within her heart and expressing themselves on her facial expressions. And they were just enchanted watching her friend wash her hands, and she just kept washing after they were already clean mechanically, like a washerwoman or a housewife grinding sandalwood. She just kept washing and washing and washing and washing, just intrigued with her own reflection. And finally, Lalita said, "Radhe, you can stop washing your hands now. You've already turned the Kund completely golden. It appears that you've washed your heart as well as the Kund, and if you don't stop now, all of Braj will turn gold." And then she snapped out of it and looked, and sure enough, the whole Kund was gold. And everybody will know who did it. And she said, "I'm not the only golden complexion girl here." And the other said, "But our golden luster is because of prolonged contact and association with you. Anyway, let's get out of here before anybody notices what happens." And then they took off to Varshana. Now, this was the favorite stopping place of Krishna to water his cows. But that day he lost a cow. So he was wandering around completely intent on finding that lost cow. And he walked right past the Kund and didn't notice that something was different, but he felt something changed. And he felt called to retrace his steps. And he went back and he looked at, what is this? That Kund has turned to gold. What is it? And he turned to the trees and the birds and the deer and the creepers, and nobody said a word, because it was meant to be kept extremely confidential. And what is this? Is this the trick of some demon? Or the demigods playing tricks again? I must investigate this because I cannot understand. So he walked down to the water, and he looked in and he saw his own reflection, but it was golden. So what is this? What is this mystical golden substance? And he called to all in Braj, where wonders abound, this was something unique, not to be missed. So all the deer and trees and flowers and creepers and birds were looking very intently. So Krishna was asking, what is this golden substance? And all he heard was his echo. What is this golden substance resounding across the countryside? He said, well, I'll find out for myself. So he walked down to the water and he touched it. And he felt a surge go through his frame that he had never sensed before. What is this? And it made him more curious. What is this golden substance? And he went and touched it again. I never sensed it. I wonder what it would be like to enter into it. So he took another step. And it came up to his ankle. And another step, and another, and it's coming up to his waist, his chest, his neck, his mouth. And then he looked around at all the deer and birds and trees who were watching with total wonder, what next? And then, smiling at them in a very childlike manner, he went all the way in. And just wandering around the Kund, trying to decipher, what is this golden substance? And only his peacock feather protruding above the water charted the course of his submarine activities. And then it stopped because he was overwhelmed. He could not ascertain, what is this golden substance? And the birds and the deer and the trees, they stopped breathing. And then the peacock feather started moving. It came toward the steps. Krishna came out. But he was no longer the color of sapphire. He had that golden substance had imbued him not only with a different luster, but a different mood. And he was wondering, that is the luster of Prem. I am no stranger to Prem. But for me, the Brijabasis are the object of my Prem, and I am the subject. This has been reversed. I am the object of Prem, but I am the subject. What is this? And he turned to the deer and the birds and the trees, and nobody could answer his question. And then he became very emotional. He began crying. He began calling out, "Krishna, Krishna, where have you gone?" And he began looking behind every tree, within every kunj, asking every living entity, "Where has Krishna gone?" And nobody could answer his question. And then his arms began to raise in the air as he turned to the sky. "Oh Krishna, ocean of mercy, friend of the hopeless, please reveal yourself to me and save my life." And then he began moving like a graceful dance, characteristic only of the gopis. And he was wanting, and then he began praying to Krishna to restore his life. And tears began flowing from his eyes like torrents of rain. And all the deer and birds and trees and creepers also began to cry, all infused with an intense feeling of separation from Krishna due to the influence of this golden substance. And this went on for some time. And everybody experienced a type of love, a flavor of Bhav that they had never sensed before because of the influence of that kund, that golden substance. But after a while, like mystic potions do, it gradually wore off, and Krishna began to wonder, "Where's that cow?" And then he proceeded to find the cow. This was supposed to be kept confidential, but some of the villagers saw what happened, and they went and told Queen Kirtita. And she was so ecstatic that she and King Vrishabhanu immediately filled this huge platter with gold and jewels and gems, each one worth a king's ransom, and sent it by royal courier to convey to Mother Yashoda that we accept your proposal. And then they loaded ox carts and wagons with more and more and more and jewels and gems and sent them over as fast as they could go. So in Varshana and in Nandagram, the palaces were just filling with the villagers who came to celebrate that Radha and Krishna were going to be married. And the news and the song was just filling the towns and resounding across the countryside. And then Nanda Maharaj, he was not as wealthy as King Vrishabhanu, but he sent back by royal courier a plate filled with jewels and gems also. But then Nanda Maharaj was so preoccupied serving all the guests who came to his palace all night that in the back of his mind he was thinking, "I have to send more of a gift to my friend," but he couldn't do it until he had seen to the needs and desires of all his guests, which didn't happen until the next day. And then he was wondering, "How am I going to reciprocate with that plate?" And he looked and it was empty. All the jewels and gems were gone. And, well, where'd they go? Is there a thief in Nandagram? "Krishna, do you know what happened?" He said, "Yes, Mata, yes, Pita, I took them. I knew that you were in anxiety that you did not have enough wealth to reciprocate with King Vrishabhanu's dowry. So I planted the jewels and gems in the field. And they'll be ready to harvest very soon, and you'll have more jewels and gems than you know what to do with. And Nanda Maharaj, my dear child, it doesn't work like that. Yes, it does. I've watched your farmers. They plant seeds, and they get back so much more bounty than what they invested. But it doesn't work that way with jewels. Yes, it will, I'm sure. And even if it doesn't work, we can dig them up and there'll be no loss. But I know it will work. He said, well, where'd you bury them? I'll show you. So he took him out to the field. And then he dug up one of the gems and it had already sprouted. And right before their eyes, all the furrows of jewels and gems became an orchard of kalpavrikshas. And there was more jewels and gems than anybody could ever imagine what to do with. So they picked them and loaded an ox cart, one after another, to send back to King Vrishabhanu. Meanwhile, Yogamaya is watching this whole thing unfold, thinking this was completely impossible. Radhe and Krishna cannot get married. You cannot take the queen or the princess at this time of Braj and demote her to the level of one of the queens of Dwarka. This must be stopped, but it has so much momentum already. Who but Yogamaya could do that? So she approached Nanda and Yashoda and told them, I appreciate your sentiments, but in a Purnamasi, I'm the guru of all the Brijavasis. Did anybody ask me? And in their excitement, they completely forgot to ask for blessings. So, oh, please, give us your counsel. And she said, according to the astrological calculations, if these children, and let me remind you, they are just children, if they were to get married, there would be all kinds of problems. It's not that I'm against the principle. And when they grow up, you can consult with Garga Muni. But now, you know, what I read in this astrological chart is you better just forget this whole idea. And by the influence of Purnamasi, Yogamaya, who, you know, creates these whole dramas, they were just so satisfied with the pastime that they forgot what it was all about. Because, you know, in the realm of Ras, when it comes to Ujjwala Ras, there is Swakya, where Radha and Krishna are married. And Nimbarkacharya, you know, he exalted that principle. The Mahaprabhu glorified Parakya Bhav, which is illegal, unlawful love. It's love for the sake of love only. No other calculation than the pleasure of the beloved. And the risk of social controversy, banishment from society, condemnation of being unchaste, being a disgrace to not only your family, but to the whole village, for which you are banished to the forest forever with the stigma of being a disgrace to the world. This risk makes the adventure all the more exciting, dynamic, and creative. And that pleases Krishna all the more. So the world had known that Radha and Krishna are eternal consorts. And Nimbarkacharya, his two principles was the high esteem for the gopi's love and the necessity of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani. Madhvacharya had already established that the deity is an eternal person, and the philosophy to destroy the Mayavadis. Ramanujacharya had already established that principle of service to Vaishnavas, which we worship with all our hearts as the only means to attract the all-attractive Lord to the insignificant Jiva. When he's pleased that he's serving my servant, along with bhakti free of karma and jnana. And Vishnuswami, raga bhakti, spontaneous devotion. And exclusive dependence on Krishna. These principles had already been established. Because in the history of the Kali Yuga, since the beginning, when the so-called brahmanas were performing so-called sacrifice with the killing of animals, the Lord had to come to Buddha to say, if your religion includes violence, unkindness, lack of consideration or empathy for others' feelings and welfare, I reject your Vedas and your God. That stopped the cruelty, but it left the world with an atheistic doctrine. So the Lord told Shiva, you go defeat that doctrine with, you know, the Vedic philosophy, but an impersonal form. Why? Lord Shiva did not want to do it, to establish impersonalism, but he had to, because the atheism of the pseudo-followers of the Buddha had to be checked by reestablishing the authenticity of the Vedas. But to go from atheism to a personal concept in one step was too much, so he first established the authority of the Vedas, but in an impersonal way. Left the country with impersonalism. Then, like the first stars of the magnitude rising from the eastern horizon, embark. Ramanuj, Madhva, and Vishnuswami III came with their two principles, which they all actually received from Mahaprabhu hundreds of years before his appearance, when he gave them all special darshan and empowered them to preach this Vaishnav doctrine with such enthusiasm and conviction that it totally dismantled the ill effects of Shankaracharya's influence. But the four Vaishnava Acharyas, the founder Acharyas, who are linked with, you know, the original, you know, Brahma, Shiva, Rudra, and Kumaras in prehistoric times, same line, revived, renewed in a renaissance of Vaishnavism, their teachings were not in perfect conformity with each other, nor with the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that was soon to come. Although they were all teaching perfect Vaishnavism of the highest order, there is still higher, highest, and most high, even in the realm of perfection. This set the scene for the appearance of Sri Chaitanya, who took those two principles from each of those four sampradayas, which he had initially given them, unified them, harmonized them, complemented them, and synthesized them in a higher perspective. So, the concept of Radha Krishna worship in Swakya Bhav had been since time immemorial. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once has come to teach the highest sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure, irrelevant of social norms, customs, legalities, taking that total risk, that total sacrifice, whatever, to please Krishna. But yet the process of sacrifice is so sublime. And as this verse in Bhagavad Gita says, its most confidential knowledge is everlasting and joyfully performed, because the process is sankirtan, singing congregationally the names of Radha and Krishna. Hare is Radhe, who takes away all our sufferings. Krishna dances with Radhe in that mantra. And Ram, according to your realization and desire, can be Balaram, can be Lord Ramachandra, or it can be Radhika Raman, Krishna, who gives pleasure to Radha. This is the most confidential knowledge. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. It cannot be ascertained by the uphill empiric quest of the mind, which has an agenda of its own. It can only be received by a humble, grateful, and empty heart, by submissive oral reception. And when that grace descends from above in a vertical axis and fills the heart, and it expands and flows out to a needy world in the form of preaching. Because Krishna first expanded as Srimati Radharani, because even the Lord himself cannot be happy without loving exchange. She, the personification of Mahabhav, the Astrasattika Bhavas, expanded as the eight individual bhavas, who complement her own, who expand into their own astasakis, and on unlimitedly into all jivas who are meant to participate in that dance of love called Rasalila. And we prepare ourselves here and now by developing the attitude of servant of the servant, not of those exalted beings in Braj, but with those exalted associates in our midst where Krishna has placed us here and now. It's all his arrangement. And if we humble ourselves, as a servant should, to seek the pleasure and benefit of his servants, he will exalt us to the highest status of servitude and award us a taste for the nectar we've always been hankering for, in the form of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
No.